Welcome back to Jesus-Centric Leadership. I'm Donna Patton. I'm here with Pastor Josh. And we have a special guest at the table with us today. It's Betsy Bowers, licensed professional counselor with Reflective Wellness Mind and Body. Thank you so much for being here. We love hanging out with you and having these conversations with you. But we've got another challenging topic we're going to throw at you. And it's around the concept of trust and why it's essential for leadership. So let's unpack the word trust first. How do you define trust? How do you see it as valuable for leadership?
Oh, that's a great question. I think there are a number of components to trust that we could go into, but I think that Gottman's research leads us to answer the question, are you there for me? And I think that when there is true trust, people can answer that with honesty that, yes, that person is going to be there for me when I need them. They're going to have my back. And Gottman and Gottman's research is based on marriages and what helps them last. And I think that if you're going to look for something as far as a success, that's a good relationship to look to, a good thing to base things off of. And so that's why I like Gottman and Gottman's work for that.
Good. Is trust, do you see trust as a harder thing to attain in today's culture than ever before?
I would say yes, because there are, I think with the potential of cancel culture and trying to figure out how to say what we need to say and also being aware of what the other person is thinking is a lot of work. I think that there's a tendency in our culture right now to be anticipatory about what the other person's response might be. And while it's important to be compassionate and aware, mind reading is a cognitive distortion. And the more you lean into cognitive distortion, the more disorganized and confused you will be.
Speak a little bit more to that, that trust is a cognitive distortion.
Oh, well, trust itself is not a cognitive distortion, but mind reading.
That's it.
Mind reading is a cognitive distortion. And if you are having difficulty with trust, one of the things that might be going on is you're expecting the other person to read your mind, or you're trying to read the other person's mind potentially.
And is some of that like we like stereotyping, or we think like we kind of get somebody figured out in the first 5 minutes, and that kind of because I know somebody else is like this person. I know Sally was a jerk, so Susie seems the same way, so she's a jerk too, that we kind of like decide who the person is, and I'm not going to trust her because.
Exactly, because I've experienced this before. And if you've experienced something before that you might have unresolved, you might be prone to the stereotyping and things of that nature.
So where is there space for grace in trust? Because it sounds like it can also become a one and done.
Yes.
You broke trust, so we're done. And it doesn't seem like grace is very, it's a high commodity in our world today.
Absolutely, very well put. One of the things that comes up for me as you mentioned that is some of the conversations that I have with clients about the nature of forgiveness and the flexibility of humans, the possibility for change. Mm-hmm. I find that if you can lean into the idea and have space for the possibility that the other person might be willing to change in relationship with the other, then you're going to have more peace and therefore more trust in a relationship.
Yeah, so if we're trying to trust someone more, like if we're leading someone that we're maybe struggling with trusting, like what's a move as a leader that you might make to try out trust?
Oh,
right?
That's a really good question. I think that leaning into the hard there is going to be important, and that being if that person is difficult to deal with, as we've talked about in a previous podcast, that you need to make an effort to be alongside that person more so that you can truly know what they're about, what elements are there, and they need to be alongside you as well so that you can build that bridge.
Which is hard if trust has been broken.
Exactly.
Like you're almost linking
it's vulnerability.
To somebody that could let you down again.
Potentially. And I think that's where a conversation about trust being broken is essential. There is a tendency for us to blow past hard conversations because they're hard. And I think that you lose the potential for adequate repair if you don't have those kinds of conversations.
Which could eventually take you to a higher level of trust, not downgrade the trust,
absolutely,
but elevate it.
Because when you experience the repair and you lean into that opportunity for repair, you see what both parties are willing to contribute in a new way to the resolution of the relationship block.
But we tend to instead respond more to the pain or the frustration of the trust broken, so we pull back.
Absolutely, and that's a protective mechanism. That's something that may preserve us in the moment, but does that truly preserve relationship? I don't think so.
So as you look to rebuild trust, what do you believe, or as you look for trust to grow in a relationship, whether it's a team, a group that I'm leading, or you mentioned in marriage, or with my children. What are the components of a good, healthy, trusting relationship?
I think one thing that comes up is a shared vision. So a idea for whether it be like your family being a particular way with certain values and getting on board about that in an age-appropriate way, of course, because kids aren't going to be able to tell you the vision for the family necessarily, but they can tell you the rules of the family, why they're in the world. So I think that that's a component of trust that's there, that shared vision. Another thing that kind of comes up is you have to have willingness for there to be differences and recognize that you can have differences without there being a rupture in the relationship.
So speak a little bit more to that.
So it's the difference between differences and conflict. I would kind of go there. Differences are things that are not deal breakers. They might be opinions, they might be preferences, something that's not going to disrupt the shared vision or the values that you have.
So give an example as a leader of how I might experience that.
If you're redoing the inside of your worship space and
way to pick that one, Betsy.
And someone has an idea of flooring that's different from yours. That might not be a reason for trust to be eroded.
We can disagree.
Yes.
We can do the hard,
but
I can still trust that the relationship's going to be okay in the end.
Yes.
And some of that, right, goes back to what you talked about before, which is that they can understand the vision that's behind that without agreeing on every detail that's done.
Yes,
right?
They can ascribe to the, I'm part of the team, but it may not come out in every little result that I want.
And it's interesting because I see that a lot here. Mm-hmm. Like as we've looked at we won't talk about worship space anymore. We'll talk about something else. But as we look at the vision of where peace is going, as God calls you to kind of set that, and as you share it, there's many times we've had some hard conversations of, well, I don't agree or I don't see it that way.
Yeah.
And we've been able to have those discussions and still move forward and still walk away feeling like, hey, I can work with you
in
the future. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I
no,
have a lot
we,
of respect for you.
Yeah, and we disagree, more often than probably the average person would think, like Donna and I do. Like, and it doesn't erode our relationship because we have that core vision that we do really agree on and can buy into and move forward into.
Yeah. I'm going to turn the tables a little bit for a second and ask you a question about what you feel like helps you be successful there. You said the shared vision, so it sounds like you're on board with that idea. I wonder
absolutely.
If there's anything else you'd add to that.
I think I mean, it now is years. It's almost 6 years that, well, it is 6 years that we've known each other since I interviewed, that like we have the long term of seeing where our heart is for ministry, mm-hmm. seeing that we care about it, seeing that, you know, I think we've seen in each other that we're not in it for ourselves. We're not in it for our way. And so I think that just that the relationship we have, like in seeing where each other is, really helps us to disagree on certain things.
Yeah, like you've got a shared history
and
the seasons that you've seen each other mm-hmm. in.
And I think it's not only us, but it's our team too. I see it with, you know, who handles our finances, Tony. You know, when she's at the table, there will be times she's like, I don't agree. And it's a safe place to sit mm-hmm. at the table at peace on our team and to say, I don't see that. But I don't feel like I feel like there's fewer times anybody ever walks away from the table frustrated. Mm. But how do I word it? You might still feel frustrated, but you'll always feel heard. And I think that's what creates a really healthy place to where you can say the hard things and the good things too. There's times I've pushed back and been like, I don't really agree with that. And pastors helped me to see it, but then I'll come back later and go, yeah, you were right on that. I get it.
And so there was like a process of like kind of mm-hmm. getting the idea percolating a little bit for you to be able to unpack it so that you could recognize that you guys were in agreement.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too that's been helpful for peace is kind of like where we disagree and where we don't. Mm. So I think like our culture of peace is very much we can disagree inside and then we agree outside. And so then we're not pitting ourselves against each other when we like make it about the overall mission and vision when we're out there. And it makes it really a safe place to disagree in here, because I'm not worried about that Donna's going to go to people, or Nicole or Tony, whoever are going to go to people, and can you believe the pastor thinks this? Like, you know, that we can wrestle inside and then be a team outside.
I think that's a great point. It sounds like that it's important not to view the differences as somehow an indication of someone being against you.
There can't be a divisiveness, because that will create a toxic environment.
Absolutely.
And nobody wants to be a part of that.
Well, and the more that you have that negative affect, that negative energy, the more that's going to build and get in a feedback loop, and then that's what's going to start defining the culture.
Correct. We're watching this show right now, a reality show. I won't say the name of it, but it's this group of women, and it is awful. I said last night to my roommate, I go, why are we watching this, and why do they want to be friends with this woman? Because all she is doing is spewing her toxicity over everybody, and she just wants to break relationships. And I think you have to look at the health of the people that you're in relationship with. I want to trust, and I believe in trust, and I want to say I'm great at it, but sometimes I do pull back hard. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, it's more of what you're for than what you're against.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a place, an environment where I know that people are for, and that I can verbally process and sometimes, you know, throw up my ideas or whatever. But if it's safe, we grow from there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have
you
to agree.
See those
we
results.
Just grow from there. Yes. But a toxic place where people are just trying to fracture relationships to fill themselves, I can't trust that. I don't want to be in that. And it's making me anxious to watch the show. I think I might be seeing you.
It creates that internal experience.
It is terrible. If you ever off mic want to know what it is, but it's just so awful. And I keep saying, why do they keep going back to that?
Mm.
Because it's not edifying. It's not good. It's not growing me.
It's interesting, because I think that there might be a bit of a, that's like an addictive quality, or even a sense of
maybe I would jump in. I think maybe it's the almost the egotisticalness of like, well, I'm not that bad. Mm-hmm. Like, well, look at them. Like, they're this rough. And so you can watch that. You can feel better about yourself. But I wonder too, if people don't do that, if they don't do those things, talk about people behind their back because it's a way of making them feel better about themselves.
Yeah.
And so that, like, because I build up my success and my platform by saying, well, look at this person. Look at what they did. I'm better than that. And you're not saying that I'm better than that, but you're talking down on them, which makes you look better, right?
Right. And I think we tend, reality TV is its own thing. Mm-hmm. We have Jeff on staff here, and Jeff's does a lot of videography for different things. And he's like, reality is its own funky monkey. It's not reality, yeah. Right? Ooh. It's very staged.
It's perception.
It is. So to reel this whole thing back, I probably shouldn't have brought that whole TV show up, but don't watch it if you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, but to bring it back, a toxic environment is not a good place to grow trust. Mm, yeah. And you want healthy places to be to grow trust so that you as a leader, so you as an individual, so you as a group can keep growing.
Yeah.
100%.
This side of heaven, we are fallible.
Yes.
We're gonna make mistakes. I'm going to do something one time or another that may lose your trust, Pastor.
And acknowledging that is key.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we grow from there.
Yeah.
And a couple that's married is going to have times where trust may be compromised. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. Maybe it's you didn't close the toilet lid the way I've asked you to, right? Maybe it's you didn't bring the groceries in this time or do the dishes. It can be different levels, mm-hmm. but we can grow past it. We can rebuild that trust.
There's that hope. There's that transcendent That's right. quality of the nature of the relationship, and it's almost like, what is at stake here?
Yes.
And asking yourself and coming back to what is truly going on, what do I think is going on, and what is actually going on here?
Correct. And that goes back to the shared vision that
exactly.
you were talking about. So we've talked a little bit about the components of trust. We've talked about a little bit of what trust is broken. Is there anything else that you believe needs to happen when trust is broken? Mm-hmm.
I think that there needs to be a demonstration of willingness to change. Mm. And I think that heart stance of willingness to be flexible and to adjust based on what maybe the other person needs and what the other person speaks for is key. And it goes both ways. That reciprocity in relationship doesn't exist if we're both not willing to really kind of look at what's at stake.
And you have to be willing, as the person that broke trust, you have to be willing to change.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, as another part in this, has to be willing to accept that change.
Exactly.
And to see it.
Yes.
Yeah, and to move past.
Exactly. And to be willing to have space for that loss of trust and then seeing things in a new place where you can build trust anew.
Now, that was never modeled to me. Mm-hmm. I had a mom that very much had a mental Rolodex. I don't know if in our culture today we know what a Rolodex is, but it's this file that can just roll and you can go right to something. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit hard for me to be able to move past because mm-hmm. I never saw that modeled.
Right.
What do we do if we don't have that experience of mm-hmm. of the ability to move past?
I think that's where living in a community alongside of people that are living the values that you align with, that they'll be able to help you with that. I love the idea, and I don't think that there's a ton of research behind this, but the idea of like the five people you spend the most time with, you become like. And so leaning into the people that are aspiring, the people that are in the values that you want to dwell in, that's going to be where you can find some guidance and counsel.
I feel like our next podcast could be, what if you don't have
Ooh.
Healthy five people around you? So Betsy, we're going to have you back to talk about
yeah,
that
yeah.
one.
Sure thing.
Yeah, and the one thing I heard one time that was really interesting too, and it's a challenge for us when we're not choosing to trust people, is you'll never know if you can trust them or trust them again unless you give them the chance to break your trust, which is really like hard to think about. But like, I think we, again, if we look back to what Jesus did, right, the grace he showed to people, and I'm not saying don't set boundaries, mm-hmm. right? You might not, if you try, if they break a big thing, you may not trust them with everything the first time. But you know, if your kid wrecks your car, you may not give him the car keys again for a while, but you maybe can trust him on other things. But the reality is we have to give grace, we have to give the love, and then we've got to let the trust build back up. But you're not going to know if you can trust them again until you give them the opportunity to break that trust.
Absolutely. The vulnerability is essential.
Yeah.
So a really hard question. Does God ever break our trust? Because I'm told in this world, you know, I'm not supposed to put my trust in man. Is God infallible? And can we put our full trust in him? I know this answer, but...
Yeah, you're asking me. No, I think, yeah, God says trust in the Lord with all your heart and lead not into your understanding. If you need a demonstration of how far God will go for you to keep his love and trust for you, you just look to the cross, right, and see what Jesus did, that he was willing to die in order that you might know that you can trust him above everything else. And then we get to model that, right, in small little ways.
But what happens when I feel like when I feel like he's broken that trust?
Yeah. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. I take that as when I feel like God has let me down, what do? Well, I look back to what the Bible says. Mm-hmm. The Bible says he hasn't. So I'm going to trust him over my own understanding. And I think that's easy to say, hard to do, but it's that reminder of, I feel like God has broken trust. Well, lament that. Mourn that, right? Read one of the psalmists where, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me? Like, Jesus wasn't the first one to say that. The psalmist was, right? Like, that's a human being saying, God, but then again, when you read the Psalms of lament, you'll see that they go through this progress of crying out to God, but then at the end they're reminding themselves, but I know you are God. Mm-hmm. I know you're in charge of everything. I know that you are the king. And they go back to what they know. So they'll cry through their emotions, but then they go back to what they know.
And if that's in Scripture, how true is that for us to pattern our life after? If that is what we see from the psalmist and from Jesus, how much more are we to lean not on our own understanding, look for a transcendent truth to guide us? Because we need it as humans with how messed up we can be.
Right. And if I lean on my own understanding, it will fail me.
Exactly.
And that's not the lenses I can look at God with. I need to look at it with trust and truth, and the truth that I find in his word.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and again, that's when we're in the midst of, you know, when they're in the midst of challenging times, we want to lean back on what does God say, not what I think and feel. We gotta judge our emotions. We got to take them captive. We've got to understand them better, all of that. But then where I go back to where I camp ultimately, after wrestling through my emotions, where I camp is, what does God say? He says, you can trust me. And so I'm gonna take him at his word.
So if we were going to wrap this up, I'm going to toss this to both of you. What do you really want leaders to take away from this conversation? What's really the bottom line? Pastor?
Yeah, I think that in the best way to have trust is to be in open and honest relationships. Right, even like I think for how we Lutherans, how we model confession and absolution, that I've done this wrong, God forgives me. Right, I think we can model that a little bit in our own relationship, that like if someone sinned against me, I want to go tell them. I want to give them a chance to hopefully confess, and then I want to forgive them and move on to building trust. And I think that's a great, like, actually what we do with our relationship with God, confession and absolution is a great model for how we deal with other humans.
Beautifully put. One of the other components that I had forgotten before is shared meaning. And one of the things that I think that is important to look back and to remember as a leader is that you ultimately are about creating and fostering experiences where people are reminded of why you're there. Mm. And that you can have that alongside of differences. You can have that alongside of ruptures, because you're going to be able to come back to what really means more than the differences and the ruptures.
And I think for me as a leader, my encouragement is remember your modeling. So there will be times I've let my groups down, that I have failed, and to acknowledge that and to let them to know that where my heart is. I love the word that you use, heart stance. And I think that's really key, and that we will grow from there. And tomorrow's a new day. We can do it.
Yeah.
We can do this. Great conversation, Betsy. We love having you here, and we love that you joined us, and we will see you in our next episode.